The Economic Development Budget Division will come to order for February 20th. Is Senator Bach around? Senator Bach's not around. How about Senator Clark? Clark around. Does anybody want to pass a bill here today? Let's see.
We got a bonding bill I like to pass through.
MC. See? Sometimes you better, it's better to be lucky than good sometimes. Yes, it's very hot. Senator Gimsey, welcome to the committee. Senate File 1919.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. Appreciate the opportunity to present to you Senate File 1919, which is an appropriation in the bonding bill for an airport, museum, and facility in the city of Spicer, Minnesota. For those of you who don't know where Spicer is, it's on one of the gems of West Central Minnesota called Green Lake, and it really is a big part of our community, and we have a lot of tourists that come in and to that area and take part in our celebrations, and glad to have the testifiers here to give you a better understanding of what this project is. It really is going to would make Spicer a very active stopping point in a number of ways, including our trail system, which we have a very comprehensive plan for. And I'll let Jean start with her portion of the presentation.
Welcome to the committee. Please say your name for the record.
Jean Spaulding.
Okay, go ahead.
I am the director for the Spicer Economic Development Authority, and again, I'd like to extend my thanks for being here today. The concept that we have for the Glacier Lakes Trail Center started a few years ago. I think one of the news items that was pretty significant in our area was there was a L-19 bird dog plane that had gone down in Green Lake 49 years earlier, and it was recovered out of the lake, which was kind of a large endeavor, and it had a lot of historic significance for the local community. That was really what was the center that got I think catalyst for getting things started. What we're proposing today is funding that would be matched with a number of sources, but it would be a trail center and a museum. I apologize. We do have handouts that are going to be coming. We thought they were going to be here, and so they're making some copies for us. But it'll be a trail center and museum. Approximately size would be 5,800 square feet. It would be located in a premier location, corner location in Spicer that would offer fabulous visibility along Highway 23. It's again, it would be a partnership between federal, state, and local funding. We are proposing that it would be something that would be operated by the local community and through volunteerism. And it would, with an investment with the state, would provide us the starting dollars that it's going to take to make this project move forward. The center would be the Glacier Lake State Trail is a... starts in Wilmer and goes up to Howick. As far as a paved trail, the trail has plans to continue up into Stearns County and has the capacity through the DNR and through their planning division to become a real regional trail center. I think we've seen examples in communities around the state of Minnesota on what trail development can do for economic development efforts in those areas, and we really believe that the Glacier Lake State Trail has that ability to for our area. The area, as far as Spicer, in the economy of our area is, as Joe mentioned, a tourism, historically speaking, tourism community. However, we need to continue to look to new sources of tourism because with the resorts closing, efforts to continue trails and to bring visitors to communities is something that we really need to continue doing in order to keep our communities, and especially the small communities, viable. We look at this as being a unique partnership because DNR has MnDOT originally had turned back this parcel as a part of our Highway 23 reconstruction. It was deemed to be used for public purpose, and we feel that this public purpose would really benefit not only the areas along the trail route, but we really see some significance in regional tourism. We have another partnership with the Department of Natural Resources. They have a parking lot which is adjacent to the proposed site, which they are very supportive of the project on a local level and would offer the opportunity for us to actually use those that parking lot for access with our development project. So we see that as another one of the partnerships that really makes this project, the pieces start to pull together. The Glacier Lake Strait Trail, we're hoping will have, with the continued paving, the destination, or it'll be classified as a destination trail, which I think is beneficial for all of us. It will increase the paved surface, and it will. It's currently serving as a vital connector for snowmobiles, and it has about a 200-mile groomed trail system throughout Kandiyohi County. The trail center that we are proposing would help to, as an information center for the area, would help to draw traffic and tourism along the route. It would have public bathrooms and facilities for information. And I think what we see as really the component that makes it unique is the Veterans Military Museum. And I'm going to let Ron McAdance talk about that particular aspect and its uniqueness.
Welcome, Mr. McAdance.
Good afternoon, and thank you for allowing us to be here. My name is Ron McAdance. I'm a combat wounded Vietnam vet. I'm here today as a volunteer to this group. We are very, very fortunate out in our area. We do have a young fellow who has a large military collection that we are looking at to have this museum to house that display that John Lindstrand has. For the last 10 years on Veterans Day weekend, a number of volunteers have been working with John setting this display up for 3 days at the Wilmer Auditorium. And we also have a number of activities that go on there, including a memorial ceremony at which we generally have one of the well-known figures from throughout the state of Minnesota, be it National Guard or reserves. We ask them to come and speak to us. Like I say, John has approximately 5,000 items that he's collected having to do with uniforms, weapons, a big GP medium tent that he sets up a hospital in to show people what a Army field hospital would look like. It's something that it gives veterans who come in and see this a little chance to take a little pride again in their service time. It's just a phenomenal thing. The thing we are looking at with the museum is that we have between 500 and 600 high school kids in the 7th and 8th grade that come through just in the 3 days that we have this thing set up. By having this museum, it would allow us to have this set up permanently to where we could have schools from all through the region contact us, and we could set up so we could bring classes through this museum on a 24-hour call notice. We could set up a number of volunteers to be there to give these young people an opportunity to see and learn about the military. This is one of the biggest things that I feel is such a plus to this project. I don't have a whole lot more, so I'll turn it over to Doug.
Thank you, Mr. McInnes. Mr. Dietz.
My name is Doug Dietz. I'm the commander of the Spicer Legion. We got involved with this airplane. This is one of our veterans that had gone down with it 48 years ago, actually almost 50 years ago now. The original plan was to resurrect the airplane, display it at the Legion Post 545. After bringing the airplane out of the water, it was determined that it was such a fragile framework and from being in there so long, and the airplane wouldn't last outside in the environment. So the concept of putting it indoors was brought up, and that's when we got involved with the DNR. They have a trail facility there, and they were looking to put in a rest area, and this concept grew to, and we're passing around now a picture of a concept drawing of this building. And it was set to memorialize Captain Carey, and as we've gone along, it's grown into becoming a museum for military artifacts, as Mr. McAdams alluded to. So this is growing from being a simple, it wasn't quite a simple resurrection of this airplane, but to that, to displaying it at a Legion post, to becoming a nice, beautiful building in Spicer and on a corner that's highly visible, that will people using the trails, visitors, whatever, will be able to use this facility. Greatly enhance Spicer as a go-to place. That this airplane is part of the Spicer area history, and we'd like to preserve it and for future generations.
Thank you. Ms. Spaulding or Senator Gimsey, I see this requires a non-state match. Have the funds been raised to match the $415,000 from the bonding bill?
They have not been matched yet. We have a fundraising committee that would be able to kick into gear, and we've been working with the federal trail enhancement program as a possibility, but their concern is they don't want to look at an application until they know that there's other funds, so it's kind of a catch-22 in putting in our application for those types of funds.
Senator Quigley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Gimsey, or one of your witnesses, I'm not clear on how much of this is being requested for the trail portion, and I guess part of my question revolves around whether or not the request for this trail portion was included in the Parks and Trails bill this year. Do you know that or have any information on that?
As far as in the packets, we have a budget for the building, and we broke it. We could break that down by square footage so that we would be able to identify trail portion versus museum. Is that what your question is geared towards? So when we go to put an application in, that will be broken down. At this point, we're just looking at it as a total project budget, and we haven't broken it down by square footage because until we know funding sources, it's hard to determine exactly, which, the project may be scaled depending upon that as well. We're fully understanding that it might be tiered project, perhaps, as well.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Quigley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Spaulding, so as far as you know, then, the trail portion is not included in this year's Parks and Trails Council bill?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Senator Gimsey. I guess I would like to also interject on your point. This group does have the mechanisms to start fundraising immediately. We've had a number of meetings on this that have been very well attended, and people are very excited about this project. We just need the some of the pieces to start to come together on it.
And
I know the energy is there as far as the volunteerism and the community support behind this project.
Just getting the plane out of the lake is a good thing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any further questions? Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Senator Bach.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Bach, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I have the 81 amendment. It's delete everything to get the bill into the form that Mr. Watson thinks it needs to be in.
Is it okay with you?
Taking Mr. Watson's counsel on that.
Okay. Do we have the A1 amendment passed? Oh, we're passing it. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Thank you. First committee, the bill has been in front of us. So.
Okay. Wait to get that. Senator Koch moves the A1 amendment for Senator Bach to put the bill in the form that he would like it to be in. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion adopted. Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A number of years ago, state program sold bonds for extension of the Western Lake Superior Sanitary District sewer line from Lester River and going out of Duluth, getting up the North Shore on Highway 61, right when you get to the town, you come to the Lester River. And as you go over that bridge, you are pretty much entering my Senate district, and you're entering the North Shore Sanitary District, where we ran about 13 miles of pipe up the North Shore of Lake Superior to hook on those homeowners that you see. If you drive up the North Shore, if you stay off the expressway and you actually drive along the lake, you'll see a lot of homes, a lot of older homes, that are sitting on ledge rock on the edge of Lake Superior, and they had failing septic systems. And so we felt that if we hooked them up to the Duluth Sanitary District, that that would be the best for Lake Superior, and we had hoped that it would be the best for the residents that live along the North Shore. Unfortunately, much went wrong in the estimates of the number of people that were going to be hooked up, cost of the project because of expensive construction of having to blast a lot of rock to get the pipe down low enough so that it wouldn't freeze in the wintertime. Very tough terrain, and what the North Shore of Lake Superior looks like. So by the time the project was built, it was millions of dollars over what anticipated it was going to be. I remember going to the groundbreaking of it just over the Lester River a number of years ago. I lived up the shore. We're very excited about the fact that they're going to get sanitary sewer and do their part to make sure that their sewage didn't contribute to any pollution in Lake Superior. And I have a couple of constituents with me here today. They're here to tell you about the financial burden that it is causing for 200 and some homeowners that live there that are hooked up to the pipe, and we're here to ask for
not what they need.
Credit. They need something over $4 million to get this project down so it's at a manageable level. It puts them kind of on the same kind of monthly cost that we expect other people to pay for sanitary sewer.
But when I met with them, I talked to them,
I said, you know, there's a lot of requests.
There's there's about $4 billion of requests, and you know, we do about
$900 million, and it's pared down so that we can be successful at something.
So what I'm proposing in the bill is
a couple of years ago, received some bond proceeds for the next leg of the project up the North Shore, up the shore from where this project was done, from Knife River up to Larsmont, up approaching two harbors. That project hasn't developed, hasn't been built. There's been quite a bit of opposition to it. WSSD outside of their service territory, and they are refusing to let that next leg of pipe drain into the WSSD sewer system. So that project is not going to happen, at least not in the foreseeable future. It's we made our best effort to clean up those sewers with the pipe into the loop, but we haven't been successful at that. But what we have is $1.5 million of bonding money that's committed for that project that we know is not going to be used. So what the bill proposes to do, it's a partial fix for this district. It proposes to use those bond proceeds from that project that we're not going to use that have been authorized and move them to this project to help relieve some of the burden that they have. So that, I think, members, is just put it right on the table. It's not what they need, but it's what I think we can accomplish. So you're considering all the requests that Senator Langseth has in front of them. So we're just proposing moving some money from one place to where a project is going to happen down to where we built one where the cost overruns were because of the construction. Underestimated. So,
Senator
Chairman,
Fishbach,
if we could have one of my constituents have an opportunity.
Okay, Senator Fishbach has a question.
Yeah, first. Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, could you just explain, and maybe I missed something. There's the $7.9 million, and then there's the one, and I've got the A1 amendment. I see the one and a half down here, and that you're just moving, is what the way you explained it. And then the 7.9 up on top.
Mr. Jensen?
Is that?
I believe that's what initially was sold.
And Senator Bach, I think Mr. Jensen knows the answer.
Oh.
Mr. Chairman, members, the 7.9 is still the original principal cost outstanding. The $1.5 million would buy that cost down to what, 6.4, and then the interest payments would still be $1,400,000 on line 1.11. So we can only reduce the principal that's in those bonds. We can't pay any of the interest expense beyond the principal. So we're not paying everything off. We're only paying $1.5 million of the 7.9 principal.
Okay.
And it's going to help the community to lower the rates for all the individuals. If there was $7.9 million available, you know, it would be a lot better for the community, but this is just a partial payment of the principal.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I wasn't quite sure where they fit together, and I thought I made him miss something, but thank you.
So that's why we give them the big bucks, you know.
Clearly, always wondered.
Chairman, having Senator Sam's committee carried the omnibus bill, when your committee and Senator Sam's Environment Finance Committee were together and worked a great deal with Mr. Jensen, that you're on the omnibus bill. We don't pay him enough. Incredibly valuable state employee to this level.
I believe that.
Thank you, Senator Bach.
And Mr. Chair, he put that on his.
That's an argument like to work in the governor's office.
You're shameless. You're shameless,
Senator.
Senator
Bach,
in a few years,
committee.
That might be a good option.
Of course, Senator Bach, I don't think that either you or Senator Fishbach get paid enough either. So, you know, anyway. Go ahead. Say your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Senator Tomasoni and Senator Bach. My name is John Fisher, and I'm here to represent the Duluth North Shore Sanitary District today. For many years, we've had a serious sewage problem on the shore. The MPCA and the County Health Department determined that we had 300 failing systems. These are the mound systems, which is 75% of the systems in our area. So they formed a committee to pursue building this sanitary system. We were kind of sold. It was sold to the membership on the basis that it would cost no more than $45 a month. Now we have a monthly sewer bill plus a special assessment on the property tax plus an $800 lump sum payment annually. This comes to about $1,930. And you multiply that times the 401 people who are left paying this, That comes to right now a little over $9 million. We were originally asking for like $4.5 million to get it down to something manageable. But I realize today we're just talking about $1.5 million. This project is financed over 20 years. Well, actually, it's more than 20 years. We're just addressing the first 20 years. You figure up all these total costs for the 400 members, that comes to over $15.5 million. Our 400 members are on the hook for $15.5 million over the next 20 years. This is financed out to 30 years. If we hadn't financed it an extra 20 years, we'd be paying $2,400 a year plus in just in sewer costs. Well, many of our members are on Social Security. We're in a kind of a low-income, high-age group. I surveyed the members of our system, and of the respondents I got, 66% are on Social Security, and they're having a really tough time absorbing these costs. We collected some data on various cities around the state, and you showing that chart? Most of them come down about here, and our costs are almost off the chart. The city of Duluth is up to about $80 a month. We're at $161 a month. If we get this $1.5 million, we may be able to cut it down to $140 a month. We need $4.5 million to cut it down to $100-$105 a month, which would still be one of the highest, if not the highest, in the state. My assistant Bill Mittelfeld is here to add any further comments.
I represent the youth end of the team. I'm a citizen volunteer like my partner, John. Let me summarize for you our pain.
Okay, wait. You sit down. Why don't you just sit down right there by a microphone and say your name for the record and get you on tape. Because you're way better than any PowerPoint that we've had so far, just so you know.
Thank you. I'm Bill Mittelfeld, and I, too, am a citizen volunteer. When John and I saw these numbers, we grew alarmed, and we united. We have a citizen action team back home, and they authorized us with a draft from the WNSSD to come down and ask for your help. That's why we're here. And as Senator Bach mentioned, the scope of our problem is huge, $4.5 million. But we understand that times are tough, and we are just asking for any help that you can muster, and we appreciate the support of Senator Bach. So let me put the numbers together as our conclusion and then hopefully answer any questions. We had 300 failing septic systems that were a threat to the largest freshwater lake in North America. If you understand economics, applied economics in particular, you know that's our most valuable resource for the longest number of generations that will ever live on this continent. The group united around that and formed the DNSSD. And then through citizen volunteers on our board, managed to inflict this pain on ourselves due to mismanagement. Our standard line is mistakes were made. Now 401 of us will be paying for this for probably 30 years. And our total debt, we won't go down the numbers path, but that's why we need your support, and anything you can do would be appreciated. We understand three widows have talked to John in the last 2 weeks asking him what should they do. Should they sell their homes now? We interviewed an 82-year-old guy, Alan Olson, who we ran across at a church meeting. And Alan said, I have the right of paying 10% of my income to flush my toilet. And after we got that, so Alan could be your father, I guess, but looking at the demographic. And I asked him, Alan, are you on any meds? He's on 3 heart meds a day and 2 asthma meds. So you can imagine what's going to happen to Alan, maybe your father's future. Sewer, meds. It's going to come to a trade-off. So with that, we're here with a big problem, and we would appreciate anything that you can do to help us, and we certainly appreciate Senator Bach's leadership on this. Can we answer any questions?
Any questions from the committee? Oh, okay, I guess you did a pretty good job. And the explanation of the amendment is very valuable to us, too. So,
Chairman,
Senator
let me Bach. Just say, who would have ever thought we expected
$160 a month for a sewer bill. But, you know, we all know the value of Lake Superior, and we appreciate their effort to step up. But I think we're asking a bit too much. Some relief for them. I think most of us agree is probably the right.
Senator Dibble.
It's consideration when you send your to Senator Langset.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if we're forwarding actual bill language or just list, but I'm just curious, maybe it's already been addressed when I was out of the room, but just this sentence that runs from 1.13 to 1.16, it's just an unusual way to phrase something in statute. The legislature expects that the bonds will be called, et cetera. Yeah, I'm reading out the A1.
Well, Senator Dibble, this is from Peter Watson, so I'm assuming that it was.
If it was from Peter Watson, then I rest. I'll just be silent.
Chairman Senator Dibble, this needed Mr. Watson's attention because this is a very unusual situation in that we're trying to get out from under some of the bonds that were sold, and tells me that this is that we actually did it this way, I believe, on the Minneapolis Convention Center. This was how we did it when some of the debt there. So, but it's used very seldom.
I'm more accustomed to if-then type statements, but this sounded like a whereas clause in a resolution. Yeah. But if Peter Watson says it's okay, I'm not one to question that. So,
and I think we can probably forward the language to the bonding committee too. So,
right. Thank you.
So, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Senator Clark.
Local bonds.
All right. Welcome, Senator Clark, and your contingency to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, it's good to be here. You just heard, I think, on one kinds of projects that are so important to get. Real hazards. We're on the other end, which is about economic activity and growth, trying to make sure that we have strong, sustainable communities. And I think that it's to be a very positive project. I'd just like to acknowledge very quickly to a number of people from central Minnesota that have joined you here today. And I appreciate the time and attention.
Can you raise your hands so we know which ones you are?
Can't see the big red buttons.
I think they have red buttons
on. So Mr. Chair, we should.
So this room's going to clear out when you get
done.
And Mr. Chair,
yes.
We maybe should ask the mayor if there's anyone left in St. Cloud taking care of the city today.
You mean like if you're a house thief, you should be in St. Cloud?
Yeah, today. There you go.
Well, in just a week, we should have a whole lot more people from central Minnesota down here. I think we really will clear out the community. We have a few people that you can see here today. Mayor Kleiss, our former senator, Teresa Bonin, our president of the Chamber of Commerce, and Dick Anthony, who is no stranger to any of you here. He is appearing on behalf of Larry Merrick, who's head of our building trades, who could not be here today, but I know he's met with some of you. We are going to spend a little time talking about the need for improvement. That's what Mayor Kleiss is going to talk about. Ms. Bonin is going to talk about the importance of the project from a business community standpoint, and Mr. Anfang is going to speak to the funding, because it's one of those things where we can put people to work, and we know that we kind of got a little bit of a job problem in this state right now. I think that you'll find everything you need to know in the handouts. We are looking at this being a match. It's a $30 million project. The city is committing $15 million through the food and beverage tax. This has been, I think many of you have been in this building. It's an incredible building. It's right on the river. You'll see you've got a map for those of us who are visual. But it frankly, almost from the moment it was built, needed to be expanded. I'm a quilter. The quilters convention really can't go there anymore. It's gotten too big. There's a number of things that are very big. This brings a lot of money into our community. But this is one of those projects that if we can enter into partnership, will generate over $32 million a year and about 270 jobs. Those are real. Those are not made up money. There has been a long and complex journey to get here. But the one thing has remained the same, that this really is an economic engine for central Minnesota, and we need to expand. And at this point in time, two-thirds of our community really do support the way that we're going about this project, and the area communities have all sent resolutions. So as we're looking forward about how we really do have vibrant, economically sustainable communities across the state. This is a good example of exactly the kind of investment that we should be making. So if it's okay, Mr. Chair, I'm going to turn it over to Mayor Kleiss.
Mayor Kleiss, welcome to the committee. And
thank you, Mr.
Just out of curiosity, if you were still a senator, would you be voting yes for this?
Mr. Chair, I'd be carrying the bill if still a senator. In fact, Mr. Chair, I did carry the bill when I was a senator. It kind of gives you the history of this proposal. It's actually, recall, it was actually passed by the legislature. Some planning money was passed in 2002, and Governor Ventura vetoed line item that project, so it's actually been through here. But appreciate, Mr. Chair and committee members, you're taking time. Just to give you a little synopsis of what this current Civic Center right now is. Again, it was built in 1988. It was built with food and beverage tax, a 1% food and beverage tax, which the legislature in 1986 authorized the city to do. It was built at that time. Now, there's been a lot of growth, not only in the region, but St. Cloud itself has added over 22,000 additional people just to the city of St. Cloud. The region, as you know, has grown significantly. It's 103,000 square feet right now. With the expansion, we would be adding over 60,000 square feet, and a big portion of that would be 40,000 square feet of existing exhibit space. One of the problems of this, the situation we have right now, we don't have what most shows and exhibits are need at least that 40,000 square feet. The largest portion of room anyway that we have at Civic Center, and most of you were there at the just recently, the room that we were in, that's the largest room. That's 20,000 square feet, and the other room that's similar to that is 15,000 square feet. Most exhibits need that. In fact, the survey of the Civic Center, about 56% of the users currently have stated to us that they've either outgrown it or they're going to have to go somewhere else or not hold an event. Again, this is a regional center that draws from a pretty large area, and it just doesn't have the space. So that's what we're looking with the match. Of course, our $15 million from the city would come from the existing food and beverage tax. This is a project that we, in fact, we have that's ready to go. We would be able to actually put this, if we had that partnership with the state for $15 million, we could actually begin this in May and actually have shovels in the ground in June and have this go. We currently have where the expansion will be is currently where our library sits. If those of you who are in St. Cloud or been in St. Cloud recently, we're building a new library thanks to the legislature and the half-cent sales tax, which the voters approved. That library will be ready this spring, and we'll be vacating the current library. That's where the expansion is going over. So we'll have an empty building ready to go and a building ready to expand. Those jobs will be immediate when we do that. So it's significant in its impact to the area, but it's the space. It's the issue, too. One of the things that's important to highlight in the Civic Center also is our Civic Center does not have any subsidy from the city. Its operating cost is all covered, runs in the black. It has for the last 12 years. It runs from the events that are the users of the facility and the events that are there. So it's not property tax subsidized. The bonds that were originally built it back in 1988 have been paid off. They were paid off in 2005. So again, that food and beverage tax will pay for our portion of that $15 million. But this is a facility that operates in the black. But what we do happens is we run the risk, as I mentioned before, with 56% of the users looking at going elsewhere or not being able to utilize this facility because of its size, we run the risk of having some type of subsidy in the future, and that's something that we don't want to see happen. So, again, that's why we're here for the partnership, and I will turn it over for to Teresa Bonin, I guess, to talk about the economic impact from the Chamber's perspective.
Thank you, Mayor.
Welcome, Ms. Bonin.
Thank you, Chair Tomasoni, and members of the committee. Thank you for giving us some time today on your agenda. Because the St. Cloud Civic Center is so important to business. I'm Teresa Bonin, President of the St. Cloud Area Chamber of Commerce. Thank you. Because the Civic Center is so important to our business region, the St. Cloud Area Chamber, which is an association of 1,125 area businesses, which is regional in nature, has taken a real lead role in the effort. But that was really driven by a number of different organizations in the last 6 months that have come together and said, we need to really let people know what the opportunity cost is of not expanding the Civic Center. So we've been together now as a group for about, quite a while, about 2 to 3 months. And it includes all different aspects of our community, from government to our downtown council, chamber businesses, as well as labor is very involved with this effort, very interested. Really every aspect of our community wants to see this project go. The need to modernize and expand was first recognized in 97. I've been at our chamber for 10 years, and from the day that I walked in the door, we've been working on this project, and it just really seems to have come together to a real pivotal point right now because of the completion of a new library, which is making the property available and a willing seller for the rest of the property that needs to be acquired to complete this project. The events that want to come to the St. Cloud area aren't able to come right now because of space limitations. Our CVB is losing sales weekly on this because of space limitations. We have turned away 101 different conventions in the last couple of years, and that's 49,000 visitors times $135 a piece for overnight stays. It's a lot of economic impact that is really being lost in our area. We also know that 56% of our current users have said that they're going to go elsewhere because of space and functionality needs that can't be met at the Civic Center. So we're in a very critical point right now with the facility. The business community really needs the Civic Center to provide a strong anchor to our downtown. We've had an incredible amount of private money that has gone into the investment in our downtown area, the development of the area. Many of you saw it when you were downtown. It's very exciting. And this project is really a public investment in what's going on privately in our area. As the mayor said, we can break ground very quickly, put people to work, $32 million of economic impact the first year we open the expansion doors and every year after, as well as 270 permanent jobs that will be added whenever we open the doors. We also are in full support, the business community is in full support of keeping the food and beverage tax that is in place to support the Civic Center right now, to keeping that in place and using it as the match on this project. And now I'll turn it over to Mr. Dick Anfang to address some of the labor.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Anfang.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Dick Anfang, the president of the State Building Trades, and very privileged to be so. Thank you for allowing a little time today. The building trades getting ready for the session this year came down to our list of priorities, our jobs, and maybe a few more jobs. The bonding bill and the transportation bill, investments by the state of Minnesota into the communities of our state, in our opinion, is probably the best possible stimulus for our return to a higher level of economic development success, a stimulus that's very much needed. The Larry Merrick, who is the president of our St. Cloud Building Trades, has been reporting to us over many years about how this community has been coming together to develop this plan, making preparations for it, putting funding in place, and getting ready for this day, for this legislative session. We know that as a state building trades that all of the bonding requests cannot be fulfilled. Therefore, we have to go through like everybody else does and like you're doing and kind of prioritize. And with unemployment at the rate that it's at, between 8 and 10% in the construction trades in Minnesota, and underemployment probably around 75%, people not working 40-hour weeks. Very, very significant, good, middle-class earning people. And so the way we tried to prioritize was to find projects that could start right now, that are ready to go to bid, that are ready to put the shovels in the ground and take people off of the unemployment lines and put them on the employment side of the ledger, just to keep to reverse some of the negativity that they've had by being unemployed. So that's how we got to be particularly on this one. It's a great project needed, and the economic stimulus of the state to the private sector will be, as you know, rolls out in the community. The private sector comes forward and invests in the community when the state does so, too. So I urge you to support this, move it forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Angfanger, maybe any one of you might know this. If we don't do this project this year, how much more will it cost if we have to wait for 2 years for the next bonding cycle?
30%. Probably about 30% more, Mr. Chair.
And that's what I thought. And I'm saying it because this is one of those projects, like a real lot of the bonding projects that we're seeing, that have a lot to do with jobs, but also have a lot to do with return on investment. And I, quite frankly, think that we're missing the boat by having such a small bonding bill, if you want to know the truth. Now, some people may think $967 million is a big number, but we did $1 billion back in 1998, and that's quite a while ago. And I, quite frankly, think we should be up in the $1.5 billion to $2 billion mark, because there's a whole bunch of these projects that are like this that need to get done, will eventually get done, will cost the taxpayers a lot more by delaying, and not only will cost taxpayers more by delaying, will not generate the tax dollars that the projects would generate if we do them now. And so I really and truly think we've got to think about the direction we're going in this legislature and start doing some of these projects that need to be done. Senator Clark, or Mayor.
Mr. Chair, I fully agree with you. And again, that's not only the construction jobs, but the jobs of this, the economic activity. The moment that this, and again, this isn't numbers that we just did. This was a study that we actually did that we updated. 270 additional jobs in the area. But again, this is construction that can happen right away. You're right. It will increase the cost if we delay. But the other issue is we have an empty building. We've got a library that we're moving into, a new library. We've got an empty building in a downtown area. One of the things that we've done a lot of work on in St. Cloud in the last few years is trying to revitalize the core neighborhoods. And the part of that is having a very healthy downtown. You get people to live back in the neighborhoods around the downtown, and that's significant. So having empty buildings doesn't help. Having that increased cost doesn't help. But you're right on. The fact is getting people in those jobs, those construction jobs, and the jobs with the economic activity is significant.
Well, and if you get how many more conventions can you get to St. Cloud if you get the expansion?
Uh-huh. Well, the main thing is not losing the 56% that we already have, and that's significant.
But I think you've had to turn down a bunch too, haven't you?
Yes,
because
Mr.
you didn't have.
Yes, yeah. Mr. Chair, we've had to turn down a bunch, and this does anticipate generating over $32 million a year once it's done. And so I think you can start quantifying that in terms of numbers of conventions, and it's a very busy used building. It is something that isn't really just for our immediate area. There are always, if you think about it, if there are basketball or hockey tournaments or others, that's where people also go and stay. If there are events there, sometimes people are going to those events and then they're going to the others. Somebody else in the family is going to the sporting events. It is the kind of place that ends up being a destination, but without really being able to have the space utilized in the way that needs to be needed by these folks, we really are concerned about what kind of loss that we'll see. So, again, I think as we're looking about how do we become more prosperous, how are we being stronger, thinking about these things in our regional centers is critical, and we certainly would appreciate any support that we can get from you.
We also have the hospitality infrastructure to support the increase. It's there. It's ready to go. So,
I was there. It's growing really fast in St. Cloud. In fact, when Senator Metzen and I and Senator Sparks went driving down Highway 15, I saw nothing but development all the way down. So.
Mr. Chair, we're trying to make it as hospitable for you as possible.
This will help
Senator Metzen.
Ate at the Granite City Grill or something.
Granite City Grill.
Group.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. And this will help their business, too. I don't know who signed me on. Was it?
Fishbox.
Senator Fishbox ran up the road there about 12 blocks. It was wonderful. So,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Metzen.
Yeah.
The State Building Trades will be conducting their convention in St. Cloud this year, and if you'd like to come visit us, I'd be happy to spend an hour or so with you.
Maybe we can't do this legally, but could you buy me lunch at the Granite City?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair, I'm quite sure that I didn't hear anything about that, but we would love to have you come for any meals that you want to, and Mr. President, I could probably figure out how to buy you lunch.
Thank you.
Senator Fishbach.
But Mr. Chair,
I think I can do that too.
Senator Metzen, I think the Granite City Brewery is actually in Waite Park.
St. Cloud.
It is in St. Cloud.
It is in St. Cloud.
Okay,
St. Cloud.
Good. Oh, good.
Oh, what, of interesting lines in our community.
Okay,
that's why
good.
We're such a good region.
Two blocks from the board.
Mr. Okay, Chair, Senator Clark, I was just a little worried when he started saying that, so I didn't want to.
Any real questions of the of the people here? Okay. Thank you all for
thank
coming.
You.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Is Senator Berglund here?
Yeah. She's probably at the shower.
Thank you. All these guys want to clear out before Senator Berglund gets up. Or, go ahead.
Now, where are we?
Thomas Lane gets a hold of it. That table down there, we're out of luck.
I know, it's going to be all over.
You can, hey, Coops, you can use that one on the pulpit on Sunday. Welcome, Senator Berglund.
Thank you
very much, Mr. Chairman. Some handouts. And I also have an A2 amendment. So
I saw this in the health committee.
This puts it in the form that you would like it. Okay, Senator Metzen moves the A2 amendment to put the bill number 2121 in the form that Senator Berglund would like it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, adopted. Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and members of the division, this request is in relationship to the East Phillips Cultural Center that we had for us in the last bonding cycle, and it was provided some funding, and this request is to put a second story on the building in order to have a wellness center. It's kind of interesting because this summer Senator Torres-Ray chaired the Public Health Working Group of the Healthcare Access Commission, and they came up with a recommendation that we should include more health and wellness facilities in low-income communities through our bonding. And lo and behold, the group in my community is asking for that now. So it would create track and other facilities for exercise. And with that part of my district at all, it's not entirely a safe place to try to be out running in the neighborhood or exercising, and there is no other physical fitness facility in the community there. There also is a request for part of the appropriation, part of the bonding increase, to be for creating a more green, sustainable building. And then part of it is for a room to be added to the second floor where the wellness center would be for training and for other kinds of employment and training people about nutrition and diabetes prevention and things of that nature. And so I have some folks here that would like to talk to you about this, and so maybe the best thing would be to hear from them.
That's fine. Okay, who's first? Whoever wants to go first, just say your name for the record and then begin your testimony.
Mr. Chairman of the committee and other members of the committee, hi, my name is Mary Juanita Leonard, and I know it's important to have this building because there are kids in ninth grade that can't get jobs because they don't know how to do things, and it's important that they get jobs so they can buy food and live under a shelter. And with this new building, kids can be tutored and get all A's on the report card so they can get a job. Now I go to the weight house, and some kids that used to go to the weight house can't because it only holds up to 60 kids. So with this new building, kids can learn more, and they can learn stuff about cultures for their history homework or something. So with this new building, kids in fifth grade that had E's on their report card can go to A's and B's and be doing ninth grade homework. But kids can't do this without this new building, because without this new building, they probably will be out there with their friends doing drugs or gangs, so we need this building. Thank you.
Thank you. Was the weight center full? Is that why people couldn't get in there? Everybody's
That's
using
right.
it?
That's
right. Yeah? Okay. All right. Who's next? Thank you very much, Ms. Leonard.
Oh, bonjour. Nigan, the way we done, Disney cars, or Seashock, Dodane, Anishinaabe, or Gichida. My spirit name is Thunder Before the Storm.
Really?
And my name today is Clyde Belcourt.
You look
full of thunder. And I'm a longtime activist, organizer, and developer for the past 40 years in and around East Phillips Park. We are in one of the most populated Native American communities in America. We're also in one of the most diverse communities in the state of Minnesota, the United States, and perhaps the world. And all of the communities are represented there. We're in also an area where we have developed two Native American community clinics to deal with the outbreak of the continuous development of the diabetes. As you know, it was virtually unknown to our community up into the mid-40s. And today, some of our tribes and some of our nations have up to 80% of the people are diabetic. We're also in one of a community where there's no real services to be provided for our youth. Henceforth, when youth don't have anything to do, no after-school activities, no sports activities, no health program to deal with health disparity, they kind of feel like they're in a containment area. And when you live in a containment area, gangs and violence break out. And we probably have at least, we know of, 14 youth gangs in that particular area. And when we interview and talk to them and do many studies, we find out that one of the reasons why they belong, they have nothing to do. They have no facilities. They have no place to go. They have no after-school activities. They have no place to do homework, and like this young lady here next to me is talking about. So this is what we're looking at in the East Phillips area, to have a culturally specific program, not just to serve Indian people, but to serve the Somali and the Hispanic and the many other nationalities that live in that particular area. And I think you will see a tremendous impact. And as far as safety is concerned, if such a building is not only built, but the expansion that we feel that is necessary. There's no place for our elders to go that are diabetic or handicapped during the day where they could get exercise, get nutritional diets and health care. And there's no place for our young people, of course, in the evening time to gather to do their homework or get into any kind of a health initiative program or eventually job training and vocations. And we know that we can provide that. We have commitment from all of the organizations that are in the community and the surrounding area that can work with us on this. So I think it's a good venture. And Mr. Chairman, members of this committee, we hope that you will give it recognition and hope that we can pull some more funds out of the state of Minnesota. We're celebrating our 150th anniversary here. And I just feel that it's time for the Indian people to get a little bit back in what they've lost over the past 150 years. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Chair Tomasoni, members, I just wanted to point out that this young woman next to me was on the bridge in the bus.
Oh, really?
So. Very honored to be with her. This building design is very different.
Say your name for the record.
My name is Scott Vreeland. I'm a Park Board Commissioner, Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board. I'm honored to be here.
We're honored to have you.
The building design is very different from our usual park building. And in order to accommodate all the uses and needs that are in this neighborhood, we need to provide a much broader spectrum of activities. And this model is much like the Wellstone Center, where it's really the people in the community that have a major role in the design and in the running of the building, and we're also seeking partners. I've been working with Alina, Augsburg, Affinity Plus Financial. We're seeking additional partners, so this long-term operating maintenance and additional capital is really a different model than our usual model. And that's one of the reasons why we're here today, is that this model is a $6.1 million building. The building that we have in front of you, that's what our cost estimates are. We're going before zoning and planning for approval of that now. And it really is the places where this health and wellness center, there's an article in the paper today about how much it costs. Well, we're looking for partners that will provide that community benefit and pay for this, because that's where their mission lies. Augsburg is already in the community working with tutoring and mentoring. We need a place for them to do those things in this building. So that's why this building is different in its construction, different in its layout. And I think this is a great opportunity, and I'd be willing to answer any other questions.
So how many people could use this place once it's is there a capacity type number that you could point to? Or
I don't know if I've ever added up all the folks that can go in it, but we have several rooms for 150. The main area can accommodate 60. We have a very large barn that can accommodate 300-400. So we can get a goodly amount of folks doing a wide range of activities in here. I could get you that number.
I see we got a baseball field attached to it too.
There's a field, and the safety of the park has been an issue for years, and this building really anchors it in a way that there's on-site folks and activity year-round that will really make this a safe and wonderful park.
Are these basketball courts outdoors?
There are outdoor basketball courts outdoors.
Okay, that's pretty neat. Any questions from the committee? Senator Berglund, any further comments? Okay.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Your consideration.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Senator Gibble?
I just want to say thank you to the young lady who came and testified. It's great to have young people here with us, and I know it takes a lot of guts. You are very eloquent. Thank you very much for telling us your story.
Thank you. We're going to see her on that side of the table one of these days.
I imagine.
Thank you.
She's going to move to the Iron Range.
Senator Chaudhry, are you here?
Thank you so much.
Where's the
Sparks?
That's it.
Sparks? Yeah. I need a chair when I leave. I know you're going to get them. Otherwise, you're going to have a chair.
Welcome, Senator Chaudhry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate you hearing this bill. Senate File 2823 involves environmental remediation along the northwest corner, or northwest quadrant as it's called, on the second busiest intersection in Minnesota. It's on the northwest corner of I-694 and 35W. On your way up north, you'll undoubtedly pass this quadrant every time you... We need this project because this was basically a dump for many years. And the city has done its best to try and clean it up and remediate it for redevelopment. It's put in $9 million of its own money. It has requested tax increment financing, which is also processing through the tax committee. We've asked for a liquor tax in the past, and we also anticipate additional property levies to complete the project. But the cost of the remediation is so high, and the costs go up every passing year, that we just simply cannot get there by ourselves. In the meantime, poisonous leaching continues to threaten Long Lake and Long Lake Regional Park, which is almost immediately adjacent to this development. This project, if we are granted, is ready to go by frost out and can provide much-needed jobs immediately. In exchange for granting us this bonding, we promise to pay the state $500,000 a year in commercial property taxes in thanks for your generosity. With that is Mayor Steve Larson from
City. Mr. Chairman, Commission members, I'm Steve Larson, Mayor of New Brighton.
Welcome, Mayor.
A pleasure to be here. Wish it could be in better circumstances, but numbers are dictating what needs to be done. We're an old community, 120 years old. I've only been involved in local government for 21 years of that, so I had more hair when I started, too. What we're looking at is trying to clean up the dump, which basically enabled the reconstruction or construction of 35W and 694, which is right now, when 694 replaced the old Highway 100, all the construction debris basically went into the Miller dump. And that's what we're trying to clean up. And the costs that have increased dramatically since the MPCA has required a methane vapor collection system to be implemented on the site. Right now it's more of a passive type of methane dispersion that we have no control of. And with the vapor collection system, we'll at least be able to control the release of the methane. We have one business right now that's on the perimeter of the dump that's going in, Transoma Medical, which you have in your packet. That's going to be looking at up towards to 450 jobs. Phase one is 120,000 square feet. With phase two, looking at 70 to another 120,000 square feet. These jobs are well-paid jobs. They're basically going to have 400 jobs at about $75,000 per. It's a miniature Medtronic type facility. But right now we're faced with an issue of working diligently with the MPCA on figuring out how we can develop at the same time remediate. And I know they don't want to parcel out all the different sites around the perimeter of the dump to go on. So to close the gap, we're trying to get to $6 million so we can, you know, basically in April start remediation and building of the vapor collection system and allow for a hotel, seven-story hotel in that intersection to start their construction process hopefully by the end of the summer. If we can remediate on that very corner of, if you look on your parcel, it's parcel A, which is very, very visible from the interstate. And it would be on the very south end of our whole development. And I think it's imperative for us to do whatever we can to make sure we don't have to pass along any levy increases to cover the cost of the project. We've been set back by devoting a year and a half to Medtronic. And when we couldn't do a full indemnification of all their medical needs with concerns they had over the dump, they went to Moundsview and developed on a golf course. And now they have 1.2 million square feet up there. And that worked out for them, didn't work out for us. So we had to basically stop all other work with any other development to work with them for a full year and a half. And that went by the wayside, and therefore we're now a year and a half behind on redevelopment. We also have seen a downturn in residents of condos. Condo sales just are not going anywhere. I think anybody in here that deals with condos understands that that market is basically overbuilt. So everything has been put on hold, and the incremental dollars that we're depending on right now are not there. We're just doing everything we can to make sure that our citizens do not have to foot the bill and raise taxes 15% a year just to cover it. So anything that you could do would be very much appreciated.
Mayor, you mentioned the MPCA. Are they participating in the closed landfill program that, in helping?
Right now we don't have any money from that. I think we had a total of $50,000 to date. We had over $2 million was earmarked when Medtronic was on board, but when they went north a mile and a half, that disappeared. So we've been working with Mr. Cannert and everybody else.
Okay. Senator Metzen.
You know, I kind of look at this project, and it's now a City of New Brighton's problem, but what contributed to it, in my eyes, is the stockyards that provided goods and services and food for the whole, probably the state, a refinery that probably did things for the whole region, maybe the state, asphalt plant that probably provided asphalt for many of our roads, and again, the two rendering plants. Now, back, talk about my age, I guess, but I can remember when anything kind of could go. I mean, you could dump this stuff, you could do this, you could do that, before we all got a little smarter and took a few years to figure all this out, but that's what was happening here. And I don't think it was just a New Brighton problem. I think it was a, you know, environmental problem even back there, but we didn't understand all that stuff then, or we didn't care, I guess. But so I don't think it's just a New Brighton issue, and for all those reasons. So we'll see if we could. That's my spin on it. I mean, you guys just didn't do it yourself. I mean, that it was okay to do all that stuff, quite frankly.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I appreciate the comment, and you are absolutely correct. The stockyards were basically...
were you there before the South St. Paul stockyards?
Heavens, no. Yeah, we were. We had our stockyards, in fact.
No. No, I changed my mind.
Well, no. What happened is we were the, you know, the rules when you're shipping the cattle from Wyoming and Montana, and you can only have them on a train for X number of days, and you have to take them off and feed them and water them, and that's where they stopped New Brighton. And there was an anticipation to build the big stockyards that went to South St. Paul instead. But we had all the rendering plants were there. We had the refineries, everything else. So everything went along with the railroad and the stockyard industry. And what we're looking, and we also had the two pole manufacturing facilities, the treatment facilities, Bell Pole and McGillis and Gibbs. We still have Bell. So we've been dealing with cleanup issues, and like you stated, things were done differently way back when. And now we have to try to change it, and I think we're the stewards of our property, and to try to make sure that none of the contamination on either side of this project go into Long Lake or Long Lake Regional Park, because if it goes into Long Lake, it goes into Rice Creek, and it goes into the Mississippi. And guess where? Minneapolis, St. Paul. Everybody gets the water. A lot of us get it out of the Mississippi River. We don't want to dump pollutants. There's already probably enough that could be coming off TCAP. They contaminate all of our wells, so we have the cleanup of the trichloroethylene out of that, and we're going to be doing that forever until it reaches a position where we don't have to sustain that flume at the 300-foot aquifer. So we've been dealing with it for numerous years, and we're going to be dealing with it for a lot longer, and I'm going to be around.
Senator Chaudhry, you have a couple more witnesses. You guys want to say anything, or are you just here for support?
Mr. Chair, my name is Dean Lauder. I'm the city manager of New Brighton, and I really don't have that much to add other than I would like to emphasize that receiving this money would mean a tremendous boost for the project. We can't proceed with the east side development without this money. The east side of the Northwest Quadrant would be predominantly commercial and business type development. We estimate 1,500 to 2,000 jobs will be created throughout the life of this project. So there are also job creation long-term, and each year that our project is delayed, it costs us $2 million.
$2 million as far as what?
As far as it would cost us $2 million towards our bond payments.
So just the bond payment costs $2 million, and plus you would lose the development on the property?
Correct.
Okay, and that's not calculated into the $2 million, right?
Correct.
Not to mention the jobs that you would be paying taxes to the state of Minnesota and
correct.
All the rest of the stuff that goes along there.
So. Yep.
Okay. Sir, do you want to add anything?
Dan?
Dan Fetter with Barr Engineering. Been helping the city out with the environmental investigation and cleanup. They wanted me here today in case you had any technical questions. So.
Any technical questions?
Not from this group.
At this hour.
Yeah.
Senator Chaudhry, any final comments?
We appreciate your consideration. Despite the regional impact on this property, New Brighton is going to pay the lion's share of this remediation. We're asking for a little help in filling the gap
And we think the benefits to the state and the region will be immediate jobs this spring, removal of an eyesore, removal of contamination to a regional park, $500,000 in state commercial property taxes, $3-some million to the school district and county. And might I add, this will make, when it's all fully and developed, it will make lovely potential legislative housing.
How far away is that?
Very close.
16.2 miles from where we sit. It depends on what time of day you go there, though.
Yeah. Well, we need a train, don't we?
Yep. Center. We're a mile from North Star.
And, Mr. Chair, methane gas is a much, much more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide, so this could be brought in under our climate change combating strategies. Could put it into the climate change action group recommendations.
There you go. All right. Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much.
Members, I know some of you have a tendency to leave, but I have a bunch of bills coming up here, and then after my bills.
Then we could leave?
No. Mr. Kuhlman is coming up, and you may want to stick around and listen to his explanation of the Public Facilities Authority and how they allocate money for a lot of the water projects that we've got coming, because it's pretty interesting how they get scores and everything. No, you guys aren't next. Hold it, you're going to wait. And then, because I got all my constituents down here, so they're going to, you guys
you're
gonna are
going to take them all
day,
to Moha tonight?
Huh? What?
You can take them all to Moha tonight?
I don't know if they're going to Moha or not. Some of them might be, they might be. But anyway, I'm a Senator Sparks, why don't you come here and chair? And
Moha first.
And,
I think as the chair, he has the prerogative for having the most bills.
Right.
Five.
He won the prize. He won the prize. I'm going to look and get up and leave. Sorry. Tie-dye practice?
Mr. Chairman and members, first bill is the Floodwood Business Park and Development Board. And this is an attempt by Floodwood to develop a business park along Highway 2. It's a very busy part of a highway in my district. Floodwood is in the southwestern corner of my district, and they've been working very, very hard to develop this area and to be able to develop some businesses and bring some jobs into the area. And I have with me Jessica Palmer and Mayor Jeff Fletcher, and they can tell you exactly what's been going on and what they're trying to do there. Jessica, go ahead.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Jessica Rich. Tomasoni and I have been working together so long, he forgot that I got married.
I
in
Palmer.
This.
You didn't invite me to it.
Thank you for hearing us today. You certainly have a lot of interesting projects to consider. The good news is a business park is a business park, and I don't need to spend a lot of your time explaining what a business park is and what a business park does. So let me just explain a little bit about what Floodwood is, our capacity to build and fill up a business park, some of the unique situations to Floodwood, and a little bit about the park, the stats on it. Some of you have had we've had the pleasure of hosting you in Floodwood. Some of you haven't. To just give you a little background, Floodwood is in northeastern Minnesota. We're on U.S. Highway 2 and Highway 73. During the past 15 years, the Floodwood City Council has worked really, really hard towards setting long-term goals to shape our community physically, economically, and socially. In the last 15 years, we've leveraged over $3 million of non-state money on projects to rehabilitate our Main Street, water and sewer improvements. We've granted loans and grants to businesses. We've done over $600,000 in non-state money for recreation improvements. It's kind of what I call the Floodwood Progress Inventory List, and that's been in 15 years only. What's important to remember about Floodwood is we are not a part of the Iron Range Resource Agency. A lot of people think that because we're up in northern Minnesota, but we're not. If there's a map in your packet, we're right on the edge of that. So we haven't been able to tap into that resource. You can be assured that we are responsible planners. We're deliberate. And we're careful in our planning. We haven't fallen short on that for our business park either. You can see on your maps where the concept of the park where it's located in relation to the city. The park is on Highway 73. It's a mile and a half off of US 2, so we've got good roads to it. It consists of 80 acres. There's telephone, electric, gas, and fiber optics that run right by the park. We've explored and found feasible three ways to run water and sewer, so we have our options are pretty much wide open to us. The property is owned by the city and has been annexed, so it's obviously a great, it'll expand our tax base by quite a bit when we fill it up. In the past year and a half, I've worked with four business owners who are interested in building on that particular piece of land. They haven't relocated to any place else. They still want to build there. But in a year and a half, our inquiries is pretty good for a small town. I can only imagine what we can do when we're ready to build some buildings on there. We're ready to go with this project. We can start as early as the spring. In fact, we've already applied for access permits from St. Louis County and the state of Minnesota off both of those roads. In 2000, this project, in its infancy stages, we had a state appropriation request, but it was viewed as a primary local project, and the state had concerns that there might be equity issues if they were to fund a local project like this. But since then, the state has funded several projects like this, and you now realize that even the smallest park does have a regional impact up in northeastern Minnesota. As far as equity argument, what's fair is fair. Floodwood's ready to go. We can break ground as early as the spring. So, one interesting fact that I like to tell people is it was as little as 15 years ago, Floodwood had completely gravel roads. We had one street that was paved, and that was our main street besides the two highways. So in just that short span, we've made a lot of progress. And taking that into consideration, I can assure you that the city will make this project happen. Thank you.
Mayor Jeff Kletcher, thanks for having us down here today. Just Jessica talked about it, but in your packet you would have a brochure from Floodwood. As you notice there, we are the hub of Southwest St. Louis County. And we're located about 40 miles from Duluth, Grand Rapids, Hibbing, Cloquet, and Moose Lake. And access to all those communities is on good roads, Highway 2 or Highway 73. Puts us in an excellent location. Also in your packet, you should see some of the annexations and the city limit sizes that we have there. Floodwood's unique in that we're based and we have several rivers going through our community, and that has challenged our community's growth. But we've taken advantage of those rivers, and we are using them for public recreation and so forth. This project is ready to go. We've been working on it as a city council for over 15 years, and we hope that we can make it happen very soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Because of the three rivers, now you all know why the name is Floodwood. Okay. Get it? Floodwood. Floods. You're not getting it, are you?
I'm so far ahead of you. Is this out, Jessica?
It's south of Floodwood, about a mile and a half.
I was asking her for a reason. Will you play golf with us that year up at Floodwood? You and I and Tomasoni?
I didn't play. I let you guys do all the work. Yeah.
Okay, that was really my question. But is this out by the golf course, out that way?
No, it would be south of town.
Well, south.
South on Highway 73 towards Cromwell, about a mile and a half south. The golf course is towards Duluth to the southeast. Yeah.
I played that. It's nine holes, but they say it's like 18 because they move the tees back when you go to the second. If you move it back 5 feet, they'd say it's like a different course. Is that right? Is that the one?
That's exactly right. They're telling you the truth, too. In fact, Brett Hull used to own that course, didn't he?
He was involved.
Yeah, Brett Hull was one of those.
So that's the thing, Mr. Chairman, south of Floodwood, down toward Cromwell. I like it.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Saxon.
Senator Metzen, it's on the way to Dallas Sams. And
excuse me, that's 7 miles north of Cromwell, Dallas Sams.
That's in my district. That's in my district also. In fact, you still got
Chairman, why don't you change the taconite lines up there about a mile
Senator Tomasoni.
Move the lines a little bit. You're so
there's
tight
rules.
With your,
there's rules. You know, but I can assure you that the Floodwood people are extremely hardworking, and they'll get this done. If they say they're going to do it, they're going to do it. And I'm I'm confident that if we give them the money, that we'll see a business park up there all the time.
You take that Savannah River, you get down to McGregor. But we'll do that
next
summer.
That's where his cabin is. That's why.
Ms. Rich, I think this looks like a good project. Do you know, would you be able to qualify for the Job Z program? And then do you have any idea of what type of businesses would be ready to move into the park?
That is in the Job Z zone. We had to fight very hard for, and with the vision that it would one day be a business park. We originally made the application to the Job Z, and it was left out. Well, we got that changed, so now it's in the Job Z. The businesses right now that are interested in our commercial and small business.
Okay.
So it's pretty hard for any Job Z qualified business when there's no infrastructure out there. That's quite a big draw for a larger business. There is a non-state match in this bill. We're already $250,000 towards that match. We have available St. Louis County CDBG. Good relationship with them. We've already started on working a match with them, and also USDA. And we have the local capacity to give some money towards the project too.
Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you very good job.
Senator Tomasoni.
Attorney and Valentine. They're coming up, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Senate file 2441 is a very ambitious project, and it's a very big project that these gentlemen have been putting together in regards to what they call the Iron Range Central Renaissance project, and it's about a wellness center and a sporting complex, mostly a hockey rink, that has a large regional significance to the area, with the idea of not only having an impact on the health and wellness of anybody from young people to seniors, but also of promoting the area and potential super center type hockey programs that would not only be played at this rink, but at all the rinks across the Iron Range. And so it's a very interesting project.
The rest of the state. What's the matter with the rest of the state? Some of the metro hockey teams.
No. We would try and get them to come up there and play. Is what it was.
Oh, of course. But you know, so it could be reciprocal.
Well, that's why they got the Blaine Super Center. This is the same concept of having a whole bunch of teams come up there and play, because we do come down. You know what, Senator Pariseau, there's all kinds of teams that come up there all the time. Do you know that? we have some big tournaments with teams coming up there. But they have been working on this for a real long time and are getting a lot of local interest and a lot of local matches, and actually private foundation money is becoming a part of this whole situation. So I don't know who wants to go first. Do you want to go first, Mr. Bell? Thank you. Okay.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Senator Tomasoni. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Robert Ballantyne, and I'm here with Dr. Dan Cornier. Dr. Cornier is chair of the Central Range Renaissance Foundation and also project leader for the Central Range Renaissance Project. And what I'd like to do is direct your attention to the handouts that were just given to you. We're going to try not to bore you too much, get you through a little PowerPoint here just to kind of summarize things. The first thing that I want to do is bring your attention to the fact that we're not talking about the Hibbing Memorial Renovation Project. That is part of the Central Range Renaissance Project, and we'll explain how that fits in just a moment. But when Dr. Cornier and I were getting ready today to do this project, we thought that there's an old saying: when you're making a public presentation, tell them what you're going to tell them, then tell them, and then tell them what you told them. And so we thought we would start with the conclusion as the introduction. So if you'd please turn to page 2 of your PowerPoint. And Senator Tomasoni, you can follow along there with okay. And we thought that it would be important to try and right away illustrate why this project is important and has statewide significance. And you heard Senator Tomasoni's description of the project. It's important that you understand today that what we are describing to you is a unique prototype, a unique approach to community planning, where we combine multiple usage and multiple programs into a single location to actually provide services to multiple cities. So with that, what we're going to cover in the next few minutes, if you look at that first bullet that we have there, Dr. Cornier, would you like to speak to that?
As
Welcome to the committee, Doctor.
Thank you very much, Acting Chairman, and thank you, Senator. My name is Dan Cornier, and I am Chairman of the Range Renaissance Foundation, as well as the Range Renaissance Project. This is a, at least in our area, an unprecedented combination of multiple communities, as well as businesses and private organizations, to try to meet the regional needs that have been identified throughout our community. One of the major needs that we have identified is community wellness. In our region, a large portion of the population is, as a matter of fact, one of the highest percentages in the state is of the senior age or is in the senior population. In addition, we have one of the highest percentages in the state of those seniors in long-term care at any time, at any single time. As a matter of fact, it's 30 to 40% above the state average. In that, we also were able to show and have been able to show that with a wellness program and with a chronic disease management program that we can reduce that number. And even if we just reduce it to the state average, we can see $5 to $7 million in savings to the government, both the state and federal government, through this program.
I'd like to add to that that we think that makes our project unique, and also as we put this project together, we are prototyping this project so that it can be used in other communities throughout the state. If you begin to have similar programs in different parts of the state, we feel that there will be a significant multiplier. But the 5 to 7 is a modest estimate on our part using your own state legislative estimates on aging and health dollars. In addition to that, Senator Tomassoni pointed out, and he spoke to the idea of using the sports complex that's connected with this. We want to put that in the proper context of total wellness. Just last night on television, Senator Barack Obama, who's running for president of the United States, said that it's time for America to start managing wellness rather than treating illness. And that's what this project is all about. And so with that, in addition, we are making this facility so that it will be economically viable and independent, and we estimate that it will actually produce revenues beyond the wellness capabilities of the tax savings of up to $30 million annually in new business revenues to the northern part of the state. We'd also like to emphasize with the third bullet that this is an unprecedented regional effort. You've had a number of honorable cities here today, communities coming forward with some very important needs. We are here representing the seven cities of the Central Range with that. And as a result, I don't know how much you people know about the range, but to have all of those cities working together with those citizens shows and underscores the importance to the area and their commitment and conviction to making the project happen. We also know that wellness is going to be an important part of the 2008 legislative agenda. In talking with Governor Pawlenty and with members of your legislature, we know that this is a very serious issue. We think that this is money well invested on your part to find a solution long range to managing health care in the state. And so with that, we'd like to tell you a little bit more about some of this story. And let me see if I can get this to move forward. Starting in June of 2007, as we said, originally the city of Hibbing was thinking of renovating their community center to the tune of $15 to $25 million. A task force was formed of citizens in the region, and the question became, that's a lot of money. If we're going to effectively utilize these dollars, what we really have to do is to determine how many different needs in the community could be addressed by this kind of a project. And as a result, the Central Range Renaissance Task Force was put together. And as you can see from this, the seven cities that actually composed this task force met together and began that effort. The result of that is that the Central Range Renaissance Foundation has been formed. Dr. Cornier, as I said, is the chair of that foundation. And on this slide, there's two important things to see. The first bullet, and I apologize for reading it to you, but it's important that you hear this. The task force, the foundation, decided that their first mission was to identify and develop services that meet the social, medical, economic, and infrastructure needs for the immediate future of the Central Range through a financial and social alliance. And that's the key to this, ladies and gentlemen. This is a public-private partnering where we are asking private development, we are asking charitable donations, philanthropic donations, combined with the civic ventures. You've been through this before. The University of Minnesota is building its football stadium with help from the state, help from a business that's going to put its name on it, and help from their alumni. It's not unlike that, where we're combining all three spheres of involvement to make this project happen. And then the second bullet, to provide these services at a single location that no city can afford by itself, that is designed to sustain itself financially. We are aware of boondoggles. This is not a boondoggle. What we have done here is put together an actual industry-producing vehicle. So with that, what came out of the foundation, and Senator Tomasoni has mentioned the sports aspects of this, a high priority was the idea of wellness, and we want to take just a few minutes to talk to you about how important this part of the project is.
Initially, I discussed with you about the importance of maintaining wellness in our senior population and reducing their utilization of long-term care. That is an extremely important part of this project, especially with the senior population in our area. Opportunity that they have to spend longer in their home is a very important opportunity for them. In addition, through our efforts, we've spoken with all of the major healthcare providers in our region and have discussed the concept of a consortium of healthcare providers providing the wellness programs at this wellness center. All have expressed strong interest in this concept, and in fact, several of them have actually dedicated funds to help us in the pre-planning and pre-design portion of this project, as well as the design portion of the project. Key components that have been included include a minor's wellness clinic. As we know, mesothelioma has grabbed the headlines recently. But this is more than just about mesothelioma and taking a look at that as a long-term health problem within our local mining population. It has also an important place in long-term care and wellness within all of our mining and mine workers in the region, not just dealing with mesothelioma, but with other health issues as well. In speaking with the major employers in the area, they have expressed extreme strong interest in this concept as well, and are in the process of evaluating their commitment to the project from the standpoint of funds and where those funds will come from. Also, using this community center is also for the families and young families within the region, and to provide them with indoor recreational facility that includes more than just hockey as it originally started, would include indoor facilities for other athletic events as well.
Let me get on the right page here. I apologize. Okay, and Dan, we spoke to mesothelioma already?
Yeah.
All right, thank you. And we also spoke to the idea, and we want to reemphasize this, Dr. Cornea got ahead of me on my slides, that this whole prototype that we're talking about, we have five different health organizations, statewide health organizations that are willing and are in negotiations with us for forming a consortium specifically at this site to perform medical procedures and work with us to develop the whole concept of wellness. This is an important slide because Senator Tomasoni spoke to the idea of sports at this project. What you have to understand is that the new definition of wellness is what they call total social integration. In other words, rather than waiting for you to get sick, give you a way to get exercise, interact with the community, be a stronger person mentally, socially, and physically. And with that, we are intentionally building exercise, recreation, and athletic facilities alongside of the Wellness Center. We're marrying these two together. There would be the opportunity for intergenerational activity. Seniors with young people, young families with mature families, all working out, exercising, participating, recreating at a single location with that. So as a result, we have that kind of a multi-purpose, multi-use activity center next to the Wellness Center. And as a result, as we said earlier, this would also be a self-supporting center. We have talked to the seven cities of the Central Range. We have 12 ice sheets in that 20-minute range. That gives us a capacity greater than the Schwann Center. That gives us a capacity to hold national and international tournaments. I should also emphasize that the United States Hockey Hall of Fame in Eveleth is part of this project, in that we have met with them, and we are continue to work with them and compliment what they are doing. Ladies and gentlemen, as we're sitting here right now, there is no such thing as the National Junior Bantam Hockey Tournament or the National Junior Peewee Tournament. The U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame Invitational Tournaments would bring people from throughout the United States and North America to this location. We want to emphasize that this is not a single-purpose facility such as just for hockey or just for soccer or just for sports. Again, we are taking advantage of the wellness aspects of this and also bringing in revenue-producing activities to support the project overall as a manifestation of the total project. Finally, what we want to also emphasize to you, Dr. Cornet, do you want to speak to the benefits on this page?
You can go ahead on that. I've got a couple points I'll make later on.
Very simply, when we put this project together, there are some key points that we want everyone in the legislature to be aware of. Right now, as we're sitting here, approximately between 2,000, Senator Tomasoni, correct me if I'm wrong, between 2,000 and 3,000 workers are scheduled to retire from the mining industry over the next 5 years. Is that about right? Close enough? In addition, we are expecting up to 2,000 to 3,000 new jobs with Minnesota Steel, Mesabi Pellet coming in, and some of the new other projects coming into the area. We have the potential of having to recruit or retain up to 6,000 new families to the area. We have been out talking to the major corporation, the major mining companies, and the quote that I remember was from a major executive saying, "The Iron Range has been the best vocational technical school in North America. We train our engineers, we train our professionals, and they leave because there's nothing here for their families." Well, those are harsh words. We know that the range is a beautiful place. We know that this project will help with retention. Those companies feel that this could be a key point for recruitment and retention with this. In addition to that, we feel that this could also help with overall development of the area of new housing, new neighborhoods in the area as well. You actually have the design there in front of you, and as you look at this, you can see that to the left, the light green and the tan and gold are phase one of this project. The light green is the actual wellness center. You can see which is what the items listed under the wellness center. The tan would be indoor athletic surfaces. These can be hockey arenas. They can also be used for curling. They can be used for indoor soccer, tennis, batting cages, golf, baseball. And so they are multi-purpose in their use. We also have some soccer fields outdoors to the side that we could put bubbles over for driving ranges if we wanted to. To the right, the dark purple and the gray are private sector development. Because of the idea of holding tournaments at this location, we've already had overtures from three major hotel corporations asking for the opportunity to build up to a 400-unit hotel on the site and potentially a convention center. I want to emphasize that that part of it would be strictly private sector development. We have a breakout in your PowerPoint as far as how these dollars would be spent. The overall project is $120 million in capital, and we are requesting from the state a 21% initial state funding request of $35 million over two bienniums, with $25 million in the first. And as a result, we feel that this modest 21% investment on the initial capital funding will easily return $500 million to the state in northern Minnesota over the next 10 years. And so we are requesting that you consider our project, support it, and we feel that will be a great boon to the state of Minnesota. And we are looking forward to sharing the prototype of this wellness center with other parts of the state. We're open to questions.
Thank you both for your testimony.
Do you have any questions, Mr. Chair?
The presentation was just as good the second time I saw it. Thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you. 2443. Johnson. Senator Tomasoni. Is that we're going to take next?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think what I'll do is I'll just turn 2443 over to Mr. Thurbill and let him explain the economic impact and the potential of this particular project on the Hall Road, North of Virginia.
Great. Welcome to the committee.
Yeah, Chair and committee members, thank you for your time. I know it's been a long day, and try to get through this fairly quickly for you. The City of Virginia has an ideal location for industrial businesses with a number of quality transportation corridors. In order to capitalize on this location, Virginia needs to extend infrastructure to a proposed new industrial park on Highway 53 north of our golf course. We call it the Mining Haul Road site. It's a haul road that allows the mining companies not to utilize our state, county, and city roads and bridges, but use this corridor that's developed for high-impact vehicles. The mining companies are outsourcing a lot of this work now, not doing it on site, so I think this corridor is a very vital economic development opportunity for us. The city needs to extend sewer, water, gas, electricity, all of the above to the site, including some roads for future businesses. There's approximately 20 acres that we've identified for a company called P&H Mine Pro. They do a lot of refurbishing and repair of mining equipment. They're based out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. They currently are looking at relocating approximately 50 employees from an existing site in the area, hopefully this fall or late winter, early next spring. The P&H company has signed a development agreement, or in the process of going to their board this month with the development agreement to try to get this project off the ground. We do have a letter of intent with them, and they're looking at possibly up to 16 to 20 new jobs within a couple of years. So we're going to be asking you for $1.825 million from bonding funds. We think that we're in a unique situation, as I listen to other municipalities, because as you see in the exhibits, we are surrounded by the mining industry. We have no land currently unless we start developing the mining land that we can use for future projects. So this 95 acres that we've identified, we feel is a very valid project. We're close to signing a development agreement with a major company who is talking about bringing work in from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, as far away as Wyoming and Ontario, if we can get this multi-purpose site facility built for them. The initial project will begin with about a 37,000 square foot building, and like I mentioned before, there'd probably be initially about 70 employees there. I think it's very important that we fund this project. It's good for the City of Virginia. It's good for the region. It brings and retains jobs to northeastern Minnesota. And I'd really like your support as you go forward with the legislation. That's all I have for me. I'll let our finance director, Ron Lackner, talk about some of the financial specifics and be happy to answer any questions.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, before Mr. Lackner
Senator
starts,
Thompson.
This haul road is pretty interesting because it's for moving big equipment across the Iron Range without going out onto the highways. And if there's a spot in this industrial park to actually assemble this equipment, such as PM would probably be doing, it's also a place where they can bring the equipment for servicing and do it behind the scenes and on the haul road as opposed to going out on the highway. So it's a pretty unique economic development opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Good. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ron Lackner, the Virginia Finance Director. I've heard, listened to a few projects here, and this is one project before one penny of state money would be spent. We'll have a development agreement that guarantees a $6 million tax base, which means that it's going to be $250,000 coming in new taxes. About one-third of that's going to go to the state of Minnesota for school tax each year. I haven't heard of a lot of projects today that are actually guaranteeing tax. This will be guaranteed by a multi-billion dollar corporation. They're also going to create some new jobs. They're going to also look at creating this site as a site for major equipment in the continental United States. So this is a multinational corporation here. The P&H Mine Pro, Joy Global is underground mining equipment. They're owned by P&H Mine Pro. They have operations worldwide, and they're looking at this site for their major U.S. site. Again, we can't make it happen without some assistance because we're developing a former mine site. These mining sites, they put overburden piles on them. Virginia has mining operations, three taconite mining operations within a couple miles of its borders, some of them active within the city of Virginia. We have mine pits on three sides of us. Anything we do is very expensive. And we don't collect real estate taxes from mining companies. So, you know, it's we need some help, and we'd appreciate any help, and I'll try and answer some questions. The city of Virginia is looking at putting close to $1 million into this project. P&H is looking at a minimum investment of $10 million. $6 million of it is guaranteed in tax base, and that will be in writing and signed off.
Chair, if I could just add a couple more things from the financial side. I'm not going to deny we haven't received funding for this project already. Out of about a $3.7 million project, the Iron Range Resources has allocated $600,000, and DEED's Greater Minnesota Public Infrastructure Grant has been kind enough to give us $300,000. However, we've been unsuccessful with the redevelopment program. We've tried 3 years in a row, and if this isn't redevelopment, I guess I don't understand it, but obviously I do understand some of the issues that go on. So I guess I want to thank Senator Tomasoni. He's believed in this project to date. He's helped us with the agencies, helped us with DEED, and any consideration would be greatly appreciated once again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for coming down. Are you all going to be downtown?
Yeah, we'll see. Thanks again.
Like you said, it's getting late in the afternoon. I'm Don Bellrood, the mayor of Gilbert. I do have a project here for some of the work on our sewer plant. I don't know if you've got paperwork on it or not.
Yeah, we do, Mayor, but go ahead.
Okay, right now our plant is a little over 30 years old. We do have Phil in with us right now. And we're going to hook into the Sparta expansion. Come spring, we've got the material down there, and that'll also go into our facility. And we have some plans for new housing in the area. So, and our plant is really in need of some drastic work right now, even to get us by for the next 5 years. So we're seeking some money for help on refabbing our facility somewhat. I think I have a total here of $1.7 million, and of that, we would split the difference. I think we had $860,000 fund.
And I know
Senator
that
Thomason.
I know, Mr. Chairman, that this has got a pretty good reading in the PFA. Do you want to add anything to this here? All of these wastewater projects that we've been seeing, and we've had quite a few come through, and we've had some that
that members didn't bother to bring to the committee because of the PFA rating. But that, one of the reasons that Gilbert is here today is because they're one of the projects that's going to be very close to being considered for funding, and it's another one of these projects that I've been talking about all along, that we need to get these things done because all of these towns and communities around the state are all being required to fix up their plants and to streamline their operations. So Gilbert's right on the cusp of receiving funding, so I think we might be able to do this one this year. So with that, I don't know if you want to add anything, Gary, or have we started any of the project yet? Or?
No, we haven't. Well, actually, we did phase one, a lot of the engineering and some of that.
Phase one is done, so, okay.
And we've got, like we say, we've got some new housing coming in, home away from home. They're going to build like 24 units on the south end of town. They've got several mine expansions and new mines that are going to open up there. So we're really excited about it. And like I say, we appreciate all the help we can get. And I thank Thomas. Senator Tomazoni for the help he's provided us, and I appreciate your time and efforts today, and I guess that's all I have. If somebody's got questions,
we'll do it.
Can we help you with? I know it's getting late.
It's getting late, and you got started so fast. Can you just say your name for the tape just so I know who you are, but we make sure everyone else knows?
Donald Bellrood.
Thank you, Mayor. Same way with you, Mr. Mackley.
I'm Gary Mackley, City Great. Clerk.
Thank you for your testimony, and I know that when we were in Gilbert, this project really should get done, so hopefully we can help you this year.
Appreciate it.
And Mr. Chairman, I got one more, but I'm not going to do that one because I'm going to have Kerry Kuhlman come up and explain the process at the PFA and then how Iron Junction might fit in and how Gilbert would fit in and how all the rest of the projects that we've had as far as the PFA is concerned will fit in and who's going to get funding and who might not get funding. So with that, I'll table over to you guys and you guys can give us a little...
Welcome to the committee.
And Mr. Chairman and committee members, you should have a book in your packet similar to this with bright blue. I'll try to go through it fairly quickly just to identify some of the issues. But briefly, the little chart of public facilities, who we are, made up of six different state agencies. We coordinate activities. We do the funding. Most of them do the regulatory aspect and ranking projects. With this, but our role is more in the municipal finance arena, trying to keep projects. Yes. Oh, you haven't passed them out yet. Yeah, those are the ones we'd like to have members have. So, I want to just kind of briefly outline the governor's bonding bill, which is now introduced and has a file number, and what's in there for the Public Facilities Authority.
That's what you got to see.
And then I'll get to the priority system and how that works. But our number one priority is the state match, because we get federal funds and the state matching funds that go into a revolving fund, and from that. That fund is how we go down the list, and that's the primary source of money for municipal wastewater. We have an identical one for drinking water. The priorities are set based on rules when it comes to wastewater, based on a lot of environmental criteria, age, condition of the system, capacity issues, whether or not it discharges into impaired water and they need to upgrade to address the total daily maximum load. A lot of criteria that's established by the Pollution Control Agency rank those projects. The loan dollars is what gets us down the list. The more capacity we have, the more we can fund. We've done about $1.6 billion in the last, be going on 20 years this year. With that, the state is...
Senator Thomas,
is the $1.6 billion just the state money?
$1.6 billion of loans using that revolving loan fund.
And Senator Thomas,
so that's counting the federal money that was added to it?
That's the state match is probably about 6 cents of that,
really?
6% of that. And federal is probably about 4.5 times that, and the rest are bond the PFA bond revenue bonds. We are a AAA rated issuer, so the funds that get recycled, I mean, the loan repayments that come back in, get recycled. Lost where I'm at. Our second priority, that's the number one priority, but that gets us down the list. Every dollar of equity that we get, we say we can leverage about $4 worth of construction with that. So the state match that matches federal dollars for every dollar we get, we not only match federal dollars, but then can leverage both of those pots by four times. Our second request is for the Wastewater Infrastructure Funding Program, or WIF. That's a common phrase used around here. And that we use, go down the list, too. And when we run across high-cost projects that need assistance that meet either the criteria for funding through USDA Rural Development, which has a loan grant program, although relatively small, they have about $8 million worth of grant and $8 million worth of loans every year. We match their grants on a 50-50. We have a bill that will be introduced shortly that will change that formula to 65% state, 35% federal, and they're going to reduce their affordability threshold, and I can explain that in a little bit, but we're trying to keep as much federal money in the state as possible, and by increasing the grant share, we should be able to use all the federal funds. Otherwise, we're afraid some of that's going to go back to Washington. So that's one way to access WIF. We match their grants. The other is if they use the loan program, and once the community has 5% of the market value of the community, we provide WIF funding in the form of a 0% deferred loan. So when the Clean Water Revolving Loan Fund is paid off in 20-year period, then the WIF program kicks in. And if you remember the testimony from the North Shore Sanitary Sewer District, you know, it's really high cost. There are a lot of things that went into that. But when we did it, we were assuming about a $50 to $65 sewer range, not $165. But the WIF portion of that extends that term out to about 30 years. So it's they'll be paying some of that. And they also got some grant money, because when we get involved in high-cost projects in crystalline bedrock, we provide half the WIF in the form of grant, not just loan. But the WIF program is designed to do that. We are also changing the WIF program because one of the things we didn't realize was we didn't take into account existing debt. So communities that have existing debt that use phase approach to building wastewater treatment, because they are very expensive, they're costing more and more every day. A lot of cities will do their treatment upgrades in 2, 3, 4 phases. Some of them now with the impaired water and the clean water issue and doing TMDLs have new systems. All of a sudden, because of they're discharging into impaired water, they have to upgrade to address new standards. We did not take that into account when we created the WIF program, so we are modifying the statute to do that, hopefully this session, and that will help out many ways. Our third request is the Small Community Wastewater Treatment Program, which is trying to keep communities with septic problems solve their pollution or environmental problems by replacing the septics, have them municipally owned, operated, maintained, so we know they'll last. And keep them out of the municipal wastewater business as far as centralized system. It's a low-cost, low-tech solution, and we're concentrating most of our effort on areas where we know there's a lot of straight pipe communities, so raw sewage is going in directly into ditches and rivers. But that program is, we're only asking $2 million. Eventually, as that catches on, hopefully we can do more of those smaller communities. And this is designed to get those communities that are below PCA's permit threshold. So we're talking cities, the average ones we've been working with around 15 to 20 households. So we're not talking small communities. We're talking very small cluster of homes. The fourth request is $2 million for the total daily maximum load grant program. That's a 50% grant for the treatment component required from a TMDL study, or once an impaired water is identified. The second phase of that is to identify where the pollution is coming from and allocate the pollution cleanup. And when the cities are involved and they have to clean up or reduce the amount of pollutant going into that water body, This program is designed to provide 50% grant funding for that. The phosphorus reduction grant program is the fifth project. The governor's recommending $2 million for that, and that's a 75% grant for phosphorus component with a $500,000 maximum cap. Phosphorus is relatively inexpensive to treat for the most part when you compare the total cost of a wastewater treatment system. I don't want to misquote, but I think Wilmer's building like an $80 million treatment plant. The phosphorus component of that is about $6 million. So it's a relatively small component. recommending $2 million for that, and that really is to help cities address the PCA's phosphorus strategy of 1 milligram per liter. Most of the permits now that they're issuing are requiring that. This program kind of helps alleviate some of that cost of that new requirement. The last request we have in the bonding is actually general fund money of $100,000 set up to allow us to set up the legal documents and negotiate with rating agencies to create a credit-enhanced bond pool program for communities we can't get to with our two revolving loan funds or other programs in coordination with DTED to allow cities to access the capital markets with a AAA, AA1 bond rating, and we'll use the open appropriation of the general fund to pay off debt service if there is a default, and use state aid intercept or negotiate repayment schedules with cities. We do this with school districts now with the Department of Education, and we do it. The PFA has a similar program that we're just modifying for counties, for criminal justice facilities, social service buildings. We guarantee the, not guarantee, but we provide that credit enhancement program. We want to do the same with municipalities when it comes to water and sewer projects that don't rank high enough for us to subsidize, at least give them access to the market, as well as other critical vital infrastructure that is needed out there. So we did a laundry list of fire protection, police protection, high-speed internet access infrastructure, those kind of things that are more tuned with economic development than environmental factors. So there's a bill that this Senator Messon's committee will hear that on that shortly. But
Senator, thank you, Mr. Coombs. Senator Dibble.
Oh, just on that, I saw that it would also allow these locals to access the sales tax exemption. How does that work?
Oh, I'm sorry. That got pulled out due to the budget projection. I forgot to take it out of the book. I apologize.
Okay. Never mind.
The intent was that was going to be the subsidy mechanism, is the sales tax rebate on participants that participate in that program.
Oh. Okay.
It's something we'll still push for when the budget allows it, because I think that's critical. Cities are raising taxes to pay state tax, and it's frustrating to me and frustrating to a lot of cities. So.
Sure. Good catch. Senator Dillon.
Mr. Chair, I think it's a good idea. So, okay. So continue to consider it.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Coleman, how much money do you need to get down to like 45 points?
Mr. Coleman?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We're targeting, with the governor's recommendation, $24 million to get down to the 45-point range. That is our goal. If you can turn, but that's not a guarantee. If you can turn to this page where you have the bar graph, then there's a little capacity chart here. And we'll get into the list later in the book. There's the green list, which is the current project priority list, and then there's a WIF report that talks about some of the changes. But our demand has grown in the bar chart. The yellow lines represent the demand. The green lines represent what we actually fund. And you'll see the little blue. It's the second page after the wastewater tab. The blue is the federal funds we get. As you see, those have been dropped drastically over the recent years. And then the red has been the state match. We're hoping if we get the $24 million of state match, the federal government, at least in the president's budget, which is the low ball figure, we're hoping we're going to get more, is $12 million a year for the state of Minnesota, that we'll be able to get down to 45 points. This year we're at 40 points. We knew the housing market had kind of bottomed out. We knew there was a lot of contractors in need of work. We drew the line at 40 points, trying to get as much done as possible. The demand was there. Cities wanted to do it. So we did more projects, or doing more projects this year than we can sustain in a long-term basis. We're looking at about doing about $150 million, and we think that will, with the $24 million we get, so we'll be doing $300 million worth of construction over the next 2 years with that appropriation, provided we also get the federal funds that match will generate. If we get more federal money, we'll raise the bar. If we get more state money, we'll raise the bar. But like I said, every dollar of equity over and above that, we would shoot for $4 more of construction. We anticipate $150 million. That, in a rough estimate, in a normal year, would get us down to about 45 points, assuming half the cities aren't going to proceed and half do. If we get some large projects that proceed or more than historic average, and last year was a pretty high demand, a lot of cities came in, we might not get down to 45, but we will try. And if the other thing that we consider is that baseline funding on that one bar graph you see by the letter A and letter B, if we didn't get a penny of money from the state or federal government, we still have the capacity to do $70 million a year in perpetuity, or until at least all our debts paid off, and then we could probably do some more, but for the next 20 years. If we get the state match in the governor's budget planning period for 6 years at $12 million, we should be able to do $150 million a year for the next 6 years. I said 12 years. Next 6 years, which is the governor's capital budget planning period, is a six-year period. And then if we get no more money, we would be down to $70 million. Every time we go over that $150 million mark, we drop that long-term capacity. 4 years ago, we were at $76 million at long-term capacity, but we have tried to do more projects and eat at that capacity, long-term capacity, simply because the need is there. Contractors need the work. So we may do that again. The economy doesn't turn around, keep plugging away. So I just want to warn you that every time we go do more, then it does hurt our long-term capacity. So we do have certain limits keeping our AAA rating with the rating agencies. They look at revenue coverage and debt service coverage, so we can't. It's not an unlimited pool, so to speak. So we need to balance current demand and long-term stuff. So I don't know if that answers your question. It's not black and white, but
no,
you know, $24 million gets us there.
Give me a black and white answer to this one. How far down the list would $30 million get you,
Mr. Kuhlman?
$30 million, we're shooting to hit the 45 points. That's our goal. But if
that's 24, but you can do that at $24 million, right?
Mr. Kuhlman?
That's $24 million for wastewater and then six for the drinking water side.
Okay, that does both of them. Okay,
and the drinking water, we're at the $6 million is adequate to get the federal funds and do the projects that need to get done.
Okay.
The WIF program, the $10 million, if you look on the green sheet, you can kind of see we use multiple sources there. And the shaded ones there are the ones we've already done this year. And you'll see some low-priority projects funded, but we're working off two priority lists, the one that ceased back in 2006. This is the last year we're going to fund projects on PCA's old priority system, but we didn't want anybody that was ready to proceed to get cut off because the priority system changed. So we kept funding those projects that were at the 400 point. They had a different point system back then through this year. But you'll notice there are quite a few projects. And some of the one-point projects knew they were going to get funded, so they didn't bother re-ranking with the new priority system. So you see shaded areas throughout there. They knew they were going to go ahead, so they didn't bother with the paperwork to get re-ranked. And they were over 400 points on the old system. We do coordinate with every grant program that does wastewater and drinking water. with our programs. They all work off this priority list. They all have different criteria and objectives, so they can't all do the number one project, but we work with Corps of Engineers, the Small Cities Program, USDA Rural Development, as well as the grant programs that the legislature has created and funded recently as part of the Clean Water Legacy Act. So we do our best with the resources. The more resources, the more we can do. It's just real simple. But we try to print as much money as possible, selling bonds, but it just, we do the best we can. And I say that, it's kind of funny, but we actually do a better job than almost all the states. There's only two other states that leverage more money than us, and that's New York and Rhode Island.
Good.
And there's hardly anybody close to the three of us. We do more with the state and federal money than anybody else in the country.
Senator Kubley.
Yeah, well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Kuhlman. You know, so, you know, with the dollars that are asked for, where would you go on the WIF list, then? How far down on the WIF list would you go?
Mr. Kuhlman?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Kubley. We have the WIF list is $10 million. We've got roughly $3 million that's ready for commitment that hasn't been fully committed. We have some big projects right up front that are eligible for WIF. City of Wilmer is $5 million, so that's going to eat a big chunk, and they're ready to bid, I believe, next month. So they're ready to go, and they are ranked number 8 on the list. If you look on the WIF report, we have the last tab, and if you go to the last 3-4 pages in there, page 18, have a cumulative total, and we broke it down into both years of the biennium, which projects are going to go this year, which projects we anticipate next year. And we got the cumulative total, so you can tell where WIF, the $10 million WIF, is not going to go down very far. We actually have roughly about $13 million. So the last city that would be getting any WIF funding would be the city of Litchfield. So if there was additional money, I think the first bucks I would like to see is in the WIF program.
Senator Dibble, I'm sorry.
Thanks. Probably seen it before, but I'm wondering if it's in here, that your point system, is that easily accessible or can that be distributed? I've never actually totally understood it.
Oh, yes. We do have a one-page summary of that explains it. Oh, is it in the book? No, it's not in the book. Oh. We'll definitely get it to you. I'll have it.
All right.
Bill Dunn can provide it, but it's
okay.
It's a combination of criteria that we worked on, spent about 3 years having tours all around the state, public hearings all around the state, getting input in. So it has environmental criteria as well as age, condition, capacity, which things that the legislature asked the PCA to do, actually. So.
Thank you.
I'm open to any questions.
Any further questions? Cap?
No, members, if there is a handout that you may have that's titled Wastewater, Drinking Water Infrastructure Bills, it looks like this. This is all of the wastewater bills, bonding bills that are currently in our committee. They are sorted not by alphabetical order by city, as it says at the top. I resorted them by Senate author. And then the fifth column in is the points on that particular project. And the higher the points, the closer it is to getting funded and getting completed.
Correct.
So when Mr. Kuhlman is talking about 46 and 45 points being the goal, if you have a project that is above 45 points, that is more beneficial to you.
Thank you. Oh, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there any I didn't realize there's so much. Very complicated. Is there any award for how long you've been sitting on the list? Is there a time?
No.
Mr. Kuhlman. Oh.
The age of system is an issue that we wanted to take into account.
Yeah, aging condition.
Because we know they have a design life of 25 years, and if the city's not rapidly growing and it's well maintained, they can usually good for about 40 to 50 years. But we wanted age to be they need to be replaced. The loan program is an ideal. It was designed by the federal government to address rehabilitation and expansion of systems in essence. So.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Thomason.
Mr. Coleman, I mentioned earlier that I wasn't going to talk about Iron Junction, because I wanted you to talk about it, because it's at one point. And just can you kind of explain why it's at one point and where it could possibly go?
Mr. Coleman.
Iron Junction, Mr. Chair, Senator Thomason, Iron Junction actually has two projects on our needs list. One is an expansion into an unsewered area of about 17 households. They've got one point because we haven't completed, I shouldn't say we, the PCA, the state, hasn't gotten the points yet to score that. And the scoring is based on the criteria. But when it comes to unsewered areas, it's the density factor and the number of failing systems you look at. And the denser the area and the more failing systems, the higher you rank. The other component is a rehabilitation of their existing system, and I think it had 6 points. But it was real low rank. So I can't explain why. Do you know, Bill, or do you have information? Bill Dunn from PCA. But I'll also admit, for the record, that I've been doing this for 20 years, and no matter how well you do with the rules, the ranking projects, and how well you look at creating funding programs that address the vast majority of need, we don't do 100. We just simply don't do 100% of the projects that need to be done. There's always a few things that are different and fall through the cracks. So I've got a few again this year. So.
Thank you.
Clear water, clear lake. You heard testimony on that one. That's kind of a catch-22. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Bill Dunn. I'm the Clean Water Revolving Fund Coordinator for the Pollution Control Agency. And looking at the file for the Iron Junction project at the plant, they're 3 years away from receiving the age point. So in 3 years, they'll get 20 more points. So that'll move them from their current 4 points to 24 points. But they do not have phosphorus treatment, which gets them more points. They're not at a capacity issue. They don't have compliance issues. They don't have TMDL. Those are all the things that move projects up the priority list. So they are doing well, but they still need help.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. No matter how hard you try, it's impossible to create a perfect program. We've been trying for 20 years. Our statute has been amended every year in 20 years.
So if we gave you $50 million, how far would down the list would you get?
50. We had definitely hit 40 and then maybe even look a little below that. Okay. I mean, we really want to get as many people employed and as many of these projects off the list as possible.
Good.
Have we lost some contractors as a result of not having enough of this?
We met with Senator or Representative Congressman Overstar. And the utility contractors a couple weeks ago, and utility contractors, and I don't recall the names of the firms, but there were three large, very legitimate firms, good contractors that shut the doors, they closed shop, all with, not counting the construction workers, just the office help of 30 to 50 people in the office that do the material ordering and bidding projects and stuff, and those are all dynamite good-paying jobs along with the contractors associated with those firms. So you can tell they were large firms. And you lose those, you lose competition in the bidding. So it's tough out there.
Senator Dibble.
Well, I see, Mr. Chair, that $50 million will get you a lot of range towns, but won't get you Chisholm or Gilbert or Floodwood. Still a lot of range towns left, even below.
Can we go for more?
Below 40. Yeah. Something 60, 70.
60. Okay. All right.
I would say there's other programs too, and not everyone is just doing it strictly for environmental reasons. So we can try to work with redevelopment, small business, or Greater Minnesota Business Infrastructure Program when they're looking at sewer and water extensions or capacity for industrial plant. And that's all part of the deed capital budget and the governor's budget. And they've asked the PFA to manage and supervise those programs as well, coordinate funding, public infrastructure. And the authority agreed to do that. So several of the bills that have talked about extensions and things look like a logical fit, but some of them have already got money in or committed money, and they just need some more. But
thank you very much.
Thank you.
They
left the historicals.
Do the historicals.
Might as well. They're here. They've been waiting all this while.
Yeah, let's bring up the Historical Society.
Thanks.
Thank you
for letting us come.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm David Kelleher, legislative liaison for the Minnesota Historical Society. Thank you for taking a few minutes to let us present our 2008 capital budget request. You're getting or about to get a booklet that looks like this that has a review of each of the five capital budget requests. You've heard a lot of different kind of presentations in this meeting and recent meetings, and we are certainly part of that spectrum of work that you as a committee do in promoting the state's tourism economy. Heritage tourism is an important part of our state and nation's economic base.
Go ahead.
If you look on page 2 of the booklet, that has a listing of the capital budget requests that the Society is bringing forward this year. Historic Fort Snelling, Historic Sites Asset Preservation, County and Local Historic Preservation Grants, the Kelly Farm Revitalization and Heritage Trails. And our director, Nina Archibald, is going to take the first one, the Fort Snelling Revitalization.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Nina Archibald. I'm director of the Minnesota Historical Society, and I appreciate the opportunity to present to the committee today. I think it's no news to anyone in this room that Fort Snelling is probably our state's most preeminent historic place. This was our first National Historic Landmark. It became a landmark in 1960. This is the highest designation that the federal government gives to historic places. And I think it has become very clear to me that this place has relevance for all Minnesotans, often in very different ways, but nevertheless, there's relevance for all of us. One of the things that has happened at the fort is that since the fort was restored in the late 1960s and 70s, the stories that have been told there have really been very much limited and focused on the 1820s. And while I think we have given wonderful experiences to the millions of visitors who have come to the fort over the year, I think we kind of missed the boat in terms of the extent of what the significance of that place is. The fact that this was the place of origin for Dakota people, they believe that the coming together of the two rivers, the Minnesota and the Mississippi, was their place of origin. That's a piece that predates, of course, the fort, the creation of the fort in the 1820s. Going forward, the presence of slaves at Fort Snelling, I think Minnesotans don't like to think of themselves as having lived in a place where there were slaves, but the fact is that we do, and that probably the most famous slave of them all, Dred Scott, was at Fort Snelling, and he married his wife, Harriet, at Fort Snelling. That's a big story. We've started to interpret the story of Dred Scott in his quarters. He was owned by Dr. and Mrs. Emerson, and Harriet and Dred Scott lived below them, and we know exactly where they lived. We have restored that and started to tell that story. It's probably ought not to be any surprise to anyone that our African-American visitation to the fort has gone up since we have started to tell the story of slavery at Fort Snelling. The story, I might mention also that many of you probably are aware because I've been saying it, that the fact that Dred Scott was in free territory had a lot to do with the case that ultimately failed in St. Louis and was a major precursor to the Civil War. When the call for the Civil War came, Minnesotans were the first to respond, and we have images of them lined up outside the commandant's house at the fort as they prepared the Minnesota fort first to go off to the Civil War. And, of course, they did not play a minor role. In fact, they played a very major role at Gettysburg, suffering 85% casualties, but nevertheless holding the line and probably turning the war around and winning it for the Union Army. The U.S.-Dakota War, probably the saddest chapter in Minnesota history, a very complicated story, but a story that results in the hanging of 38 Dakota men in Mankato, the encampment at Fort Snelling, below Fort Snelling, of over 1,000 men, women, and children, suffering the winter of 1862-63. Many people died there. We don't even know the exact number of the people who died there. And the place continues to come forward right through World War II when the fort was decommissioned in the 1940s. Over 300,000 Minnesotans mustered through Fort Snelling during World War II. So we've got a lot of work to do and a big story to tell, and I think we're up to it. But we've got some problems. I think we're absolutely compelled by the stories and the teaching that we want to do. That's what's really behind it. We are going to need capital resources in order to do that. We have a visitor center that's out at Fort Snelling, an underground visitor center that was put there, probably the worst location in the state to put an underground building. But nevertheless, we have one, and it's a building that is failing, and we're doing what we can, even as it takes on water and doesn't serve our visitors very well. The request that you are looking at for us has basically three elements. One is the stabilization and preservation of historic structures that are out there. We have four of them entrusted to our care. I should emphasize that these are state-owned buildings, and we're trying to do our best by them, and we do want to see that those buildings are preserved. There are two large barracks buildings, one remaining mule barn, and an ordnance building, all of which are state property, for which the society has been directed to care, but nevertheless, they are state buildings. We also would like to do some work within the historic fort. The fort has never been accessible during the winter. We'd like to put some classrooms in some of the historic buildings down in the fort and then make the fort accessible during the winter months so children can go down there. The fort is a magical place in the winter. We also need to put some ADA accessible restrooms down there, which are very much needed. And finally, our proposal includes a replacement of the existing underground visitor center, which is taking water. We need to do something about that. I might say that project is not new to you. We have had appropriations in the past. We had an appropriation in 2005 and 2006, and we have done work with those appropriations, taking care of the historic fort and planning for the future. The architect on the project is HGA Architects of Minneapolis. We've been through an extensive design process with them, and we have considered many options for this project. Those of you who've been in the Senate and in the legislature for a long time know that. I think what we are presenting to you today is a responsible vision for the future of Fort Snelling. It's been mentioned earlier from this table today that this state is celebrating its 150th anniversary, and ironically, it was 50 years ago, on the 100th anniversary of this state, that the idea of restoring Fort Snelling came. And at that point, a vision was produced, and that vision has sustained us for the last 50 years. But I think going forward, we have a big responsibility to expand what it is that we do there, to tell the bigger story. This is an opportunity as we celebrate our statehood. So I'd be happy to take questions, and I know David will be very brief about the other parts of our request.
Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Chair and Ms. Archibald. I guess I've gotten a couple of inquiries from Dakota tribe leadership wondering, and I'm not aware, so if I'm off base, you'll have to correct me, but I guess, they're wondering, if the story is told about the Dakota people's belief that Fort Snelling is that a sacred site, and if there's any intention to commemorate the Dakota people who were incarcerated there during the 1862 uprising.
Senator Sparks, Senator Kubley, clearly our intention is very much to tell a Dakota story. I made reference to the place of origin. It is a sacred place where those two rivers come together. I think we have fallen very short as a state in not acknowledging the agony and our responsibility for the U.S.-Dakota War. It was not a one-sided affair. I mean, it takes two to have conflict. There's no question about that. But we intend to work with Dakota people and, in fact, do in telling the stories that we have, for which we have responsibility.
Senator Kubley.
Thank you, Ms. Chair and Ms. Archibald. I think there is some interest in the Dakota tribes of doing something to commemorate both of those issues in a way that would that they would be willing to supply a portion of the funding that would do that commemoration, but they would also like to be included in the planning. And I know you've said before that you are interested in working together with them, so I assume that that would be a possibility. So,
Mr. Chair, Senator Kubley, in fact, I spoke with one of our staff people this afternoon who's leading up the interpretive planning process, and she and a group of other staff people are meeting this coming Saturday with a group of Dakota elders in Granite Falls to work on the interpretive planning for Fort Snelling. So it's happening right now.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'll continue and be very brief. Looking around the table, I see a number of you who are on the Capital Investment Committee. You have made visits to places where the historic sites asset preservation requests take place. If you look on pages 10 and 11 of the booklet, there are some examples of the buildings that need some help: the Hill House, the Jeffers Petroglyphs, Split Rock Lighthouse, etc. Those are the core needs of keeping the buildings in good shape for the public. Many of the buildings are over 100 years old, and they weren't designed originally to be public places. If they were homes, they were designed to be residential structures, and the wear and tear of thousands of visitors takes a toll on those locations. A complete list of the asset preservation request is on page 12. Moving along, the next item is the county and local historic preservation grants. Those are grants that go to cities and counties to help those government units preserve their historic facilities. They're competitive grants, and they're in many cases what makes the difference for doing a roof or doing a window in a way that's really sympathetic to the historic character of the building. The last two are on pages 14 and 15, the Oliver Kelly Farm revitalization. That request is to do pre-design and design work to figure out the next phase of the life of the Kelly Farm. The Kelly Farm is a National Historic Landmark. The visitor center there is, I think, similar vintage to the Fort Snelling Visitor Center, and it needs some help. It needs some additional space. So through the pre-design and design process, we'll figure out exactly what is needed there and what the costs of the next steps would be. And finally, the Heritage Trails request is for two trails. It's a continuation of a number of interpretive trails that we've done around the state, and those are done in cases where we have either a lower level of staffing or no staffing on a site, so we can provide interpretation of that site's history to the public. The public can enjoy the outdoors but yet learn something in a place where history happened. Mr. Chair, we would be happy to take any questions. We appreciate your time and your interest in the work that we do.
Thank you both very much. Senator Tomasoni.
Chair, Mr. Archibald, so the Fort Snelling would be your first, that'd be your first formal request.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Tomasoni.
You're well aware of the fact that there's way more bonding requests than there are, that there is bonding capacities. You don't have to answer this now, but if you had your druthers and could request a certain amount of money, that would be less than what you actually need. Can you maybe kind of let me know in the next day or so I can make a
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, we can certainly do that. It's painful to do that, but I've sat here and I have listened to what you're up against, and I'm pretty sympathetic to what you're experiencing.
Okay.
Mr. Jensen.
Mr. Chairman and members, at Fort Snelling, there's the Upper Bluff area. Could you help the committee understand what the difference is there?
There
are some requests, I think, coming before the committee for that, so this might be a chance to understand the difference there.
Yes. Just to begin, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Jensen, Fort Snelling is one place, but we in Minnesota performed an act, an immoral act, when we built Highway 55, which broke Fort Snelling apart. And I'm going to ask David to say a little bit about that.
Mr. Chair, I have some maps that I can give to you when we finish up here. The upper post is the area across 55 from the historic fort that has what we call Officers Row and some other barracks buildings. That is in the area where you see, when you drive by there, you see ball fields, soccer fields, and baseball fields. That area is owned by the Department of Natural Resources and certainly needs some help. The request that you will see that's coming in from Hennepin County is for emergency stabilization of those buildings, putting new roofs on, shoring up the windows, and they're using Sentence to Serve crews to do that work. So it's a really good bargain to make sure those buildings don't implode, which has been the case in the past couple of years, that a couple of those buildings have collapsed, literally collapsed. So that is an important request. It's separate but related to the request that we're bringing forward because, as Nina mentioned, this once was all knit together as part of a common history.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No announcements? We're
members
done?
Of the committee.
Huh?
We're done for today.
All right. Good meeting. Meeting's adjourned.
Thank you very much.